Welcome to Shortwave, a PBS NewsHour podcast on foreign events that have an impact close to home. I'm NewsHour foreign affairs reporter-producer PJ Tobia. The Ebola outbreak in West Africa that began in the spring of 2014 has been slowly winding down for months. Since the start of the outbreak, there were more than 26,000 confirmed cases of Ebola in Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone. More than 11,000 people died. And while the worst days of the epidemic are behind us, the disease is still killing people there. Experts who study Ebola and other diseases like Lassa fever worry that the viruses won't stay over there.
These things are coming to our doorstep, whether we like it or not.
Miles O'Brien is PBS NewsHour's science correspondent. He's just back from the heart of the Ebola crisis in Sierra Leone. He was there reporting a four-part series on Ebola and Lassa fever for the NewsHour. You can catch the stories on the broadcast starting this week.
It may not be Ebola, it may be some other infectious disease, but the world is getting smaller and smaller every day, and the trajectory and the speed that these diseases will be in our backyards is something we should all be paying attention to.
In fact, both Ebola and Lassa fever have already made their way to U.S. shores. You might remember four American healthcare workers who traveled to West Africa to help during the crisis became infected with Ebola. Then there was the case of Thomas Eric Duncan. He was that Liberian man visiting Texas who infected hospital workers after he became ill and died from Ebola. Just on Memorial Day this year, a New Jersey man died of Lassa fever after returning from a business trip to Liberia. We're going to dedicate this week and next week's episodes of Shortwave to the Ebola crisis. Today, we'll focus on the scientist detectives tracking the disease. Next week, we'll tell the human stories from on the ground, including Miles' own close call with the Ebola virus. But first, what is Ebola?
It's a zoonotic virus, meaning it normally lives and is spread among animals, and somehow makes a jump into human beings occasionally. These zoonotic diseases can be the worst kind of disease that you can imagine, because a virus which is relatively benign for a rat or a bat can be just horrifying and incredibly lethal in a human being.
Here's the thing. Miles says that scientists don't even know a lot about why these diseases jump from animals to humans. In fact, they don't know for certain which animal Ebola came from. They have a guess, though.
All roads seem to lead toward bats. There is a cousin of Ebola called the Marburg virus, which has been discovered in certain species of bats. And researchers have found Ebola antibodies in bats, which clearly suggests that the immune system of these animals has had to contend with Ebola or something like Ebola. But no one's ever found the live virus in these animals.
Let me repeat that. Scientists have never actually found Ebola in a bat, but they're pretty certain that's how humans got it. It turns out, there's a lot we don't know about this virus.
It's an extremely elusive virus for whatever reason.
Even the first case of this Ebola outbreak, what they call the index patient, is surrounded in mystery.
The first death recorded in this epidemic was a 2-year-old boy who was playing underneath a tree in Guinea that was infested with bats. And it's not uncommon for these young children in this part of the world to actually eat the bat meat. And there's a lot of reason to make a connection here. There's circumstantial evidence that the bats, somehow the virus was in the bat, which jumped to the boy. And from then on, it goes from human to human.
Aha! A smoking gun.
Sadly, that tree was burned. And so those bats are gone, and there's no way for researchers to go there and test them. And instead of a smoking gun opportunity for researchers to finally find that live virus in its animal reservoir, the tree quite literally was smoking, and it's kind of a dead end.
There have been a lot of dead ends in tracking and treating Ebola. Miles says that part of the reason is that it kills so quickly and then disappears.
Ebola has historically cropped up in very isolated places and sort of snuffed itself out before there was much of an opportunity to focus on this problem.
There isn't even a rapid, cheap test for Ebola like there is for pregnancy or even HIV. Blood samples have to be taken to a lab and run through sophisticated equipment that can be hours away from remote villages.
in the midst of this horrible epidemic, there were precious little tools available to health workers to provide a rapid diagnosis of someone who might have Ebola. The symptoms of Ebola are a fever and vomiting and diarrhea, and it's horrible, but it's not the only disease which presents that kind of symptoms. And so if you're in the field trying to make decisions about where to put people, how to quarantine them, how to triage them, you really don't know.
As you can imagine, this can lead to all kinds of terrible outcomes. But here's the silver lining to this awful, tragic epidemic. Because there were so many cases and it went on for so long, scientists have had a better look than ever before at the virus.
They're getting closer. This horrible epidemic has researchers more focused on this. There's a lot of work tracing the virus lineage. I think it's just a matter of time before they'll find it. That's going to go a long way toward helping stem it in the future.
In his broadcast stories, Miles gets into the quest for both a rapid test and a vaccine. But one of the things that intrigued me most from his reporting is the way scientists are tracking the spread of future epidemics. Miles talked to people from the World Health Organization and Centers for Disease Control who try to predict human behavior during an outbreak. They're trying to forecast how the next one might unfold.
Things like the patterns of people in West Africa, how they commute, how they live, how dense the populations are. They get very deep into the details of human behavior and try to predict it, which is, of course, human behavior ultimately is not very predictive.
It turns out that deciding where to put hospital beds and diagnostic equipment in a pandemic emergency isn't very easy.
We can forecast a hurricane pretty well these days. The forecast you issue for a hurricane doesn't change what the hurricane does, but a forecast that you issue for an epidemic changes behavior of the human beings that are driving the epidemic.
For example, say the Centers for Disease Control issues a cold and flu warning. Because of that warning, more people will go get the flu shot, and less people might get sick. But knowing how many people will get the shot, or who will even hear the warning in the first place, is difficult to guess. One tool to help figure this stuff out, social media.
And this is kind of a big data component to it. Things that you can see either in the conventional media or on Facebook or on Twitter or you name the social media, if you're able to search huge amounts of that data and have the right set of keywords and the right linguistic skills to spot the keywords in French or Creole or whatever the language might be, you can identify an emerging threat faster than typical health organization bureaucracies can.
With so many possible breakthroughs on the horizon and this outbreak petering out, it's easy to feel some optimism about humanity's next battle with the Ebola virus. But Miles says we shouldn't get complacent.
I think it's important that we don't just step away and ignore these things just because there's not this huge crisis underway. It's time that we think about our public health system, not just here. The only way to stop outbreaks like this is to support places like Sierra Leone. Among the poorest countries in the world, they don't have the infrastructure, they don't have this support. They need our help. And an epidemic, an outbreak in their part of the world is something that we will all be a part of.
Next week, tune in for part two of my conversation with NewsHour science correspondent Miles O'Brien. He tells us about the human impact of the Ebola virus on the places he visited in West Africa. That's it for Shortwave. We'd love to hear your thoughts on our program. You can find me on Twitter, at PJTobia. Shortwave is a production of PBS NewsHour, Sarah Just, executive producer. Justin Kenny is NewsHour's senior producer for foreign affairs and defense. Travis Daub is creative director. Vanessa Dennis created the graphics for Shortwave. The theme music was composed by Jeremy Gibson. Jenny Martyr and Margaret Myers edit Shortwave's online content. Natalie Boyd offered production assistance, transcripts by Aisha Jama. Special thanks for editorial oversight and inspiration to Hari Srinivasan. I'm your host and producer, PJ Tobia. I hope you'll join us next time for Shortwave.